to another season of lectures, and we're very happy to have Dr. Hayim Tawil with us for this first series of three lectures beginning tonight. Help us get deeper insight into Kitbei Kodesh. Just a note that you should be aware that Professor Tawil has just published a volume on his experiences, his escapades with involved for a number of years, not too many years ago. Right, so it came out beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Operation Esther, of getting out a large number of the remnant of the Jews that were in Yemen. So this just came out maybe 2 weeks ago, something like that. You'll be able to see it later. At this point, we don't want to take up any more time. So, Dr. Tawil.
Okay, I appreciate it very much, Rabbi Shammah. Again, it's a pleasure to be here. And I see that I have a Hasidim over here, you know. Hasidei Umot HaLashon. I, just for as introduction, I wonder if there is any body in the United States today cares really much about the Hebrew language. I was invited to in my shul, Yeki Shul in Washington Heights, to lecture. We had a beautiful opening for the book with Rabbi Schechter about 3 weeks ago, but for Yom HaAtzmaut, they asked me, what do you like to lecture? I said, I'm going to lecture for you for free, only on one condition, that the lecture will be, is Hebrew dead in America? Was the Hebrew language dead in America? This is the language that this is the lecture that I want to dwell on. He says, what are you talking about? Who's going to come? What, Hebrew? So I said, listen, that's the way it is. I mean, I'm not interested in politics. I'm tired of the Yemeni Jews. And that's the subject I would like to lecture. And of course, the lecture was very successful. We had maybe 80 people coming from all over Washington Heights. It was no advertisement. It was something very, very close. And I opened the lecture and said, ladies and gentlemen, how many people for the 50th anniversary of Israel are speaking about the importance of the Hebrew language? Everybody speaks about pluralism, homosexualism, feminism, every ism in the world. But as far as the language, Hebrewism, it is forgotten, completely forgotten. Completely forgotten. This is really Chentzach. Once a nation forgets its language, automatically the nation, this nation, any given nation, will completely assimilate, because the language is the source of everything, especially when you speak about Lashon HaKodesh. Especially when you speak about Lashon HaKodesh. So, Hayim V'Amavet B'Yad HaLashon. And tonight I want to start with a series of lectures. I don't know, it'll be two or three, it depends on you, on what we call Hapax Legomenon, or difficult words in the light of ancient Near Eastern texts. In other words, try to clarify various words within the sentence. Maybe it sounds dry, but people who love the language will find it fascinating. Because I'm embarking now on for the last 4 years I was working on Shir HaShirim, and I have about 300 pages written. I left it. And I'm engaged now. I have about five books. Embarking on a work that I hope that Hashem will give me koach to finish, of a lexicon of biblical Hebrew and Akkadian lexicon. Such a lexicon was never written. Meaningly, people in the Bible, now this is absolutely to do with lexicography. There's no theology there, no social studies, no anthropology, strictly philology. And I've said to myself, Tawil, you should take the Tashur Bekarnav, and you should go ahead and do it. And Hashem gave me koach, and from August 28, after I isolated almost 1,000 words, relationship between Akkadian, which I will speak in a minute about the language just to bring you in, of course you know about it, but some of you knew, 1,000 words which are cognates between Hebrew and Akkadian. Now, mind you, that in Hebrew language we have 8,000 words, different words. I'm speaking Hebrew language, I'm speaking the Bible. I'm not speaking but only 24 Sfarim, Kavdal Sfarim. I'm not speaking about the later Hebrew, Mishnaic Hebrew. We have 8,000 words. In Akkadian we have 50,000 words. Akkadian was preserved because you know that in Akkadian they wrote on clay, and clay does not perish. It could be broken, you could restore it, but unfortunately in Hebrew we have very, very, and I'm just trying to bring you in before I go into it, in Hebrew, in Biblical Hebrew, speaking Bilshon HaKodesh, Biblical Hebrew, Mi Bereshit Ad Divrei HaYamim Bet, we have very, very little extra biblical material. The greatest thing that was found was of course the Dead Sea Scrolls, but it's very late, the second century, third century, before the era, and this is what you call intertestamental, this is a transitional between Lishon Mikra and Lishon Hachamim. It's a fascinating field by itself there. I've written three articles concerning of late Biblical Hebrew, one of the verb tzalaf that you know, one of the verb sachal that you know, and now an article came on verb listaper. Nobody knew what is the etymology of the word listaper. And the fourth article, which is coming out now, is about the verb la'as, to chew, which is absolutely is not in Biblical Hebrew. I don't understand why the verb la'as, which is just a common word, should be out of the lexicon of the Biblical Hebrew. La'as, to chew. It's only in post-Biblical Hebrew. So there's a lot of work to be done. So Biblical Hebrew, we have 8,000 words, does not really mean that we had only 8,000 words. It means that in the corpus of the material that we have, in the Kavdalet Sfarim, we have only 8,000 words. But Lelo Safek, I could see it very, very clearly while I'm working on the lexicon, Lelo Safek, we had more words than 24, but they were not incorporated into the Tanakh. They were not. Now, mind you, if we will find, well, we found few words in ancient inscriptions, Hebrew inscriptions, from Eretz Israel proper, we find maybe 6 or 7 different words that are not included in the Tanakh. Ma'anyan. In the Lachish letters, in the Gezer calendar, Atzad, Yarach Etzed, which means a month of harvesting, but which is Akkadian Etzedu, to harvest, is a very, very ancient word. But you have it in Gezer calendar, which is the most ancient Hebrew inscription, that was found in the city Gezer, dated back to the 10th century before the era, the time of Shlomo HaMelech. The time when Paro, Siamon, gave Shlomo HaMelech Gezer as a dowry to when he got married to the daughter of Pharaoh. So you have the bulk of the inscription that we have in Eretz Israel, very, very small. You have the Gezer calendar, you have the very famous Shiloah inscription, Zot HaNikba, you know, and Hezekiah, you know, 4 or 5 lines. You have the Ketuvot of Yavniyam. You have the on clay, all kind of this and that, dedicated two jars of wine to the temple. You have the Ketuvot of Dan that we found now, which is Bet David is mentioned there, but this is already in Aramaic more or less. You have the Lachish letters, which is a bulk of letters. But very, very little we found. Yeah, you have Birkat HaKohanim that we found, Yavacha Hashem v'yishmerecha, Ya'er Adonai Panav, or something like that, Atsham.
One of the two
is pretty complete. Incomplete, right? I didn't read much about it, I don't have really much time, but which is very, very important, the Birkat HaKohanim, and very, very other, yes, but this is not, this is Homer. Where is the Sefer Divrei HaYamim Malchei Yehuda, Sefer Divrei HaYamim Malchei Yisrael, Sefer Milchamot Adonai, Sefer Yashar, Sefer not Chochmat Shlomo, what is the name of the Sefer of Shlomo? I forgot, Sefer something Shlomo HaMelech, of course, I love to know the Sefer Shlomo HaMelech, and all this, you know, I mean, By the way, what we have really, it's most probably historiographically, it's only a remnant and an impression of the Hebrew language. Impression of the Hebrew language. Hebrew. I wrote an article, and let me start with this. In Orientalia, which Rabbi Shammah doesn't have because this is in Aramaic, my PhD dissertation was in ancient Aramaic from the 10th century to the 8th century, exactly Nagid Mi Tkufat from Shlomo HaMelech until Hizkiyahu. And I compared the Aramaic inscriptions. It's ancient Aramaic, a very interesting dialect. I would love to teach it somewhere, sometime. And they from the 10th to the 6th, really. And then there is an inscription called Nerab inscription. Nerab is city in Tema. It's not Teman, Tema. When Abu Na'id, the one of the last kings of Babylon, left Haran, and for 10 years. Wasn't Tema because he didn't want to worship the god of the moon. He moved his entire worship of the god of the moon to Tema, and there is an inscription there of his mother, Adagupi. We know her mother name is Adagupi. And Adagupi was very, very old, and the inscription says that she is blessed because that she could speak. And the word is that she could speak. So the word is that she was not kvad pe kvad lashon. In other words, that the words could come out of the mouth. I say, Kvat Peh Kvat Lashon, and we know it. We know it from Moshe, and we know that everybody from Moshe says this is impediment of speech. The Rashi says, Megam Gem, this is the beauty of the whole thing. That Kvat Peh, with the verb Kaved, is employed always with impediment of any part of the body. You speak about Kvat Ozen, Kavdu Einav Mirot, Yede Moshe Kavdu, the terminology Kaved, is impediment of physical, the impediment is a technical terminology in Akkadian medical texts. In the medical text. Where is the medical text that we have? Why? We didn't have Rofim. Yirmiyahu doesn't speak about Israel. Hatsuri en Bigilad, Imrofe en Sham, Madu alo arta alta arukat bat ami. There's no balm in Gilad. Hatsuri en Bigilad, Imrofe en Sham. There's no balm in Gilad, which is medicine. Rofe and Shami, healer is no there, you know, physician, you know, MD from Columbia Presbyterian. Madu alo alta alukat batami. Why the wound of my nation did not heal? I'm dying to write a lexicon of medical terminology in the Tanakh, and I have a lot. I collected, especially in the book of Vayikra. It's amazing. So meaningly, that Alashona Ivrit, the Hebrew language, as we know in biblical Hebrew language, of course, was very. We had more than 8,000 words. Now let me just, as by way of introduction for 5 minutes, saying that the Hebrew language that we have in the corpus of the Tanakh, of course, are divided to three parts. One is the poetic language, which means the poetic languages are attested always, mostly in the songs, in the poetry, in Birkat Yaakov, in Shirat Azinu, in Shofim 5, Shirat Dvorah, and whatnot, and I cannot go into it. This is maybe a lecture for next year, Be'ezrat Hashem, ancient Hebrew poetry. It's amazing. Then you have Middle Hebrew, and then you have Late Hebrew. And we know the strata of the language. One of the greatest fellow that is investigating it is Avi Horowitz from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. He's a friend of mine. He is the intertestamental par excellence. One, he will be here, you will hear something unbelievable. The layer and the development of the language. Now, the Hebrew language was integral part of Semitics, and this is by way of introduction for some people that were not here and do not know what we did for the last 4 years. I don't know how many years I'm lecturing here. The Hebrew is part of Semitic languages. Now, basically, we have what you call Proto-Semitic, a language of X which we don't know of its existence. And then from Proto-Semitic, you have the various dialects that we are concerned with in ancient Semitics. You have East Semitic, which is the language that was spoken in Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia, the land between the two rivers, specifically Iraq, the land between Prat v'Hidekel. This language we call, the generic term is Akkadian, on the name of the city Akkad, which, by the way, never was found archaeologically. But it is mentioned in Bereshit. Akkad v'chalena v'eret Shim'a. Bereshit, Akkad. They couldn't find the city, Akkad. But we have it in Bereshit. Akkadian is a generic term. Before Akkadian was a Sumerian. Sumerian is a monosyllabic language, not Semitic, really crazy language, which monosyllable. Each syllable denotes a word. For instance, the word E in Sumerian is a house, and Gal is big. E Gal means the big house, means the palace, and then of course is Akkadian Ekalu, Hebrew Heichal, and Aramaic Heichala, which is He and Gal. Lugal means a king. Why? Because Lu means a man, and Gal means big. Big man, like the Indian says, he's a big man, he's a king. And so it's a fascinating language by itself. But it's not a Semitic, it's not Indo-Aryan, it's Indo-Aryan most probably, from the Indus Valley. Akkadian was born in Mesopotamia, and the first Akkadian, we call the dialect is Old Akkadian, but Akkadian is a generic term to the language that was spoken in Mesopotamia from 2200 before the era to about 200, 300 years before Abraham, in Mesopotamia, and was the lingua franca all over the ancient world until Aramaic took over and became a lingua franca, most probably at the time of Hizkiyahu, because we know Al Daber Al Avadecha Yehudi ki Shomrim Aramit Anachnu, we understand Aramaic, don't speak. But at least in writing, it existed until the time of Koresh, Cyrus. Because how Akkadian was deciphered, because a very famous Behistun inscription that you have in three languages, Aramaic, Persian, Akkadian, they will be able to decipher it. That's a fascinating thing. So in other words, at the time, until the time of Nebuchadnezzar, the destruction of the temple, Nebuchadnezzar spoke Akkadian. What kind of Akkadian? Shortly. East Semitic, Akkadian the generic term, Old Akkadian, Old Babylonian, Old Assyrian, Old Babylonian, Old Assyrian, Old Babylonian spoken in the very, very famous great dynasty of Hammurabi. The very famous, he was not the founder of the dynasty, the last of the dynasty was Samulail, which is our Shmuel, of course. I call my kids, you know, at YU Samulail, if I know the names. Yes, Samulail, Shmuel, was the head of the end of the dynasty, it was 18th century. In this, and from Old Akkadian 21, 22 to the 18th century, 1800, a little 1750 or so, you call the era of Old Babylonian in Mesopotamia, Old Assyrian north in the mountains near Cappadocia and the mountains of Turkey toward Syria, it's Old Assyrian. And then, of course, there was the destruction of Hammurabi and the Old Babylonian period, the Kassite came, and then it became a Middle Babylonian. And then you have, after Middle Babylonian, you have Middle Babylonian, Middle Assyrian, speaking about the 15th century until the 9th century, and then you have the very famous New Assyrian, that the Assyrian that we know, Anesher HaGadol, the great eagle that have conquered the entire world, the first time of the invasion of Tiglath-Pileser III into the northern part of Eretz Israel, and by son Sargon, which really was a usurper to the throne, Sargon Sharrukin, which means the king is legitimate. No king will call himself Sharrukin, only Malkitzedek. The translation of Sharrukin, Sharru is a king in Akkadian, and kin from the verb kanu, verb kun, nachon, the legitimate king. Malkitzedek most probably is the same name. So Malkitzedek means not Malkitzedek, my king is Tzedek, but the king of righteousness, the legitimate king. Most probably he was a usurper. There was a case of usurper kings called themselves the legitimate king. Sargon, and of course this is the very famous New Assyrian period, until the very famous Battle of Carchemish in 601, that the Neo-Babylonian have conquered Assyria and destroyed Assyria, and then you have the Neo-Babylonian period until Nebuchadnezzar, the very famous Nebuchadnezzar II, not the first one was at the 10th century, Nebuchadnezzar II, which his name is Nabu Kuduru Utsir. Now you know that Nebuchadnezzar is spelled twice in the Tanakh. One is Nebuchad Netzar, but the correct spelling is Nebuchadrezzar. So it's Nabu, Kuduri, Utsir. God Nevo, which is the God of the Chokmah, we know the Nabu, Kara, Bel, Karas Nevo, from Mishayahu, the God Nevo, Kuduru, which means a boundary, a border, Utsir, which is from the verb Natsaru, the Hebrew Natsar, which means to guard. God Nevo, guard my territory. And of course, the destruction of New Babylon period by Koresh and Akkadians stopped to exist. Only in writing in Neo Babylonian period as a language of an archive. Now, we're speaking about the entire 2 more minutes, and then we'll start with the goodies. We are dealing now with a period, of course, from Abraham Avinu until the 5th century, until the books of Chronicles, the Ramim Aleph, the Ramim Bet. This is the period of the influence, or maybe influence, more borrowing, sometimes it's borrowing, sometimes there are cognatics, and so on and so forth. Now, I'm writing a lexicon, and Baruch Hashem, Hashem Natan Likoach, and I finished 5 books, and I finished 6 letters. And it's from August 28 that I finished the 6 letters. Until August, I was collecting it in cards. Just the Akkadian Hebrew, Akkadian Hebrew, Akkadian Hebrew. But since August, I have I'm finishing the 6th letter, which is letter Bet. I started with Kuf because I was very, very comfortable with the letter Kuf. Now this work is going to be very, very important for the biblical students and also theological students and biblical students that do not know Akkadian. Why? As I told my wife the other day, if I had such a dictionary, lo hayti lomed Akkadi. I'm not interested in Akkadian per se. I'm not an Assyriologist. I'm not interested in going and excavating and cuneiform and completing and translating. I'm interested. I was all my life interested. Then I came to the United States, by the way, because at the time the Hebrew U did not have a department of Semitics, because Chaim Tadmor studies in Chicago at the time, so I had to come to the United States to continue my studies at Dropsy College. And the point is that the lexicon that I'm writing, and you're going to be integral part of these 2 sessions with me, or 3 sessions, I don't know if I'll do Shir HaShirim, maybe yes, maybe not, it depends upon request, you know. I need letters, you know, and so. This lexicon will open the door to the biblicist. In other words, a person in the Bible does not know how to approach Akkadian. He doesn't know the word in Akkadian in order to go to the CAD, which is the Assyrian Dictionary of University of Chicago, which is an unbelievable work. Most probably I had to spend a half year in University of Chicago because they did not finish the CAD. They started the CAD writing it from 1956, and they're missing five letters, Tet and Pei, and 3 more or 4 more letters. Most probably I have to work with the cars there, but I have the von Soden dictionary in German, but von Soden doesn't give you the sentence. It gives you the Akkadian word and the source, but doesn't give you the sentence. The CAD, the Assyrian dictionary, give you a word and a sentence. What I'm doing here is a very technical work, but I find it fascinating. I'm very, very excited. I'm rejuvenated. I say Hashem gave me 2 more years. With all the sorrows of my wife, I think with this, I'm concentrating and I'm rejuvenated. I'm very happy. Besides, my son became a chiropractor. He's giving me a treatment every month. So the work is done. It will be a word, the Hebrew word, the biblical Hebrew word. Then it will describe, then it will be the Akkadian equivalent. And I will read one of those with you today as a part. And then where you could find the word in Akkadian, now it's going to be semantic, etymological, and idiomatic equivalent. And I find it fascinating what I'm doing in Psalms. And I'm sorry that our friend Binun is not here today. But in the Psalms it's fascinating, because the idioms there goes with the etc. I have a fellow by name of Professor Richard White. He's a professor in Oxford, or maybe you know him, from Oxford, a great Semitist, a Goy. But he wrote his dissertation on Divrei HaYamim, the Targum to Divrei HaYamim, in Oxford under James Barr, a very famous Semitist, and proved that Divrei HaYamim, the Targum on Divrei HaYamim, is early. How early, I cannot go into it. Be it as it may, he looks at this, he's going to be the editor, because he edited this book about the Jews of Yemen. He did a good job. He says, it's amazing. It's amazing, he says. He doesn't know any Akkadian. He knows Arabic, he knows Syria, he knows Aramaic, he knows Greek. He doesn't know Akkadian. Closed. Hatum. The man is 50 years old. Hatum. Every time I said, why you? I said, come, Richard, come here. I want to read you something. He says, unbelievable, the relationship. He says, you know what's going to happen? After this lexicon will finish, people will come and take the lexicon and start to learn exactly the relationship between the Akkadians, Mesopotamia, and Israel in different light, from sociological point of view, theological point of view, I don't know, medical point of view, or whatever. You know, you take the bulk of material and then you make something out of it. I cannot do it. I'm a lexicographer. So, within this work, I've decided the Rabbi Shama asked me, what do you want to speak? I said, I would like to speak about Hapax Legomenon. But Rabbi Shama clarified a little bit more. He says, Hapax Legomenon and maybe difficult words which attested more than once to shed some light on it. Now, you have to understand that sometimes Hapax Legomenon, sometimes we could shed light, sometimes we cannot shed light. But you have to understand that the relationship between the languages. It is what I'm trying to do, and I don't have much help here, you know. I don't have graduate students that could work with me. You know, I do the whole work myself, you know. And I don't depend on the graduate students at YU. I mean, Akkadian, I'm Tzchim Akkadit Ala Rosh Halev, you know. They hardly know Hebrew. It's not for present company excluded, Rick. So he, Rabbi Shama, says, listen, hapax and also words which are, has to be clarified, and this is really will be a lexicographic studies. I won't just want to say a few words before I start that I am not going into argumentation, meaningly I'm not taking a word and say that's this he says and she says and Rashi and Rabbah and whatever. I'm going to give you the meat, straight to the point. I'm not going to give you start to argue. If I'm going to take a hapax that says, who amar kacha, vizeh amar kacha, v'ani omer kacha, lo nigmo. I want to have your money worth and to try to give you the best that I can within the short time. So, we're going to start. Hapax legomenon is a Greek word which means said once. Hapax legomenon said once. This was the terminology. The scholar calls it hapax. The hapax legomenon, the terminology came during the Hellenistic period in Alexandria when they were studying Homer and Homeric literature. They've created the word as hapax legomenon, and the word was created, or the idiom was created in 325 to 234, we find hapax legomenon, word that is said once. But there is another identification of in Greece, and hapax legomenon is another term which means hapax eremenum. I don't know much Greek, but hapax eremenum, which means said once, and this legomenon, which means said twice. So another, you have really three terminologies concerning it. In our tradition, as you know very, very well, all of you, in Masorah Parva, we have the word lamed, which stands for late or later. Meaningly, there is none other. And milah hakadosh. The clear case, the very famous case is, of late leita, is in Bereshit Perek Aleph. It says, late, yikavu lamaim merahefet et hashamaim et hamaor tadshe velamikve kvashua yishritzu et hamaor. This is our in the traditional, in the Masoretic period. In a later period, בתקופה של המדקדקים, the grammarians, starting, of course, in Rabbi Saadia Gaon, the greatest one of them all, I mean, a genius, unbelievable. Saadia Gaon, in his very famous Kitab al Sabarin Lafadash, Sefer של 70 המילים הבודדות, there are five different works in the period of time of our Medagdikim, the period of time of Saadia was what, from the 10th century And let's say to the 10th, 11th century, is HaSefer Rabbi Sa'adia Gaon, HaSefer Shel Yehuda Ibn Quraysh, Rasala, Shne Halakim, too. And there is another work by Rabbi Yitzhak Ben Mem, and we don't know his name, and the name of the book, there's no, you know, it's a break, we don't know the name, She'elot Atikot, which means ancient questions. And then, of course, Menachem Ben Saruk, in Mahberet in Erech, in his Mahberet in Erech Galab, Gimal Lamed Bet, which I'm going to give you the article. I've dwelt on it on my article, Istaper. Why in Hebrew is Istaper and Galab? Maybe we'll discuss it later. Nice little article. Galab, which is in Hapax Legomenon, tested only once. Where? Ta'ara Galabim in Yeheskel. Yeheskel is a mine. Since he lived in Babylon, he's a mine of realia, botanica, fauna, anything. He's amazing. Amazing. He lived in Babylon. Forget about this Michigan thing, you know. But, you know, the amount of material that you could shed light upon Babylon, too, not only about what happened between us. So Menachem Ben Saruk and Yehuda Ben Hayyuj, of course, on Judges 14:9, he discussed the business of the Milim Bodedo. Now, the idioms, if it was later, the idioms of the medieval commentators are, of course, Milim Asher Lahem Dimyon, words which are, and Lahem Dimyon, which are not, there's no similarity to them, Milim Bodedot and Milim Yehidaot, one word. And I want to start maybe. Now, the two lectures will be about Milim Yehidaot. Some of you maybe heard it from me and some of you may not. Milim Yehidaot in light of Akkadian, in the light of Ugaritic. Now let me proceed and say that Ugaritic is a Canaanite language. Ugaritic is Northwest Semitic. It is a mother tongue to Hebrew. It was spoken in Lebanon, in the coast of Lebanon, Phoenicia, before the Phoenician. It is written in cuneiform script, but an alphabetical script. It used to be my baby once when I was a student in Colombia. I left it. And Ugarit was destroyed at 1250 BC by the very famous Philistinians who came from Crete and conquered the whole Ritzua, and until, of course, Gaza, and then the Egyptians stabbed them. Ugaritic. So Ugaritic is a Canaanite language, Northwest Semitic, and Akkadian is East Semitic. I hope that you have the Tanakh. Without the Tanakh, you cannot, you know, this is not sitting in a cafe over here and drinking. This is the Tanakh. Now, of course, in the Tanakh, you have the very famous case of Vayach. I want to start from Bereshit, and I want to go and to give you as much as I can until Divrei Hayamim, in order to show you the complexity of the Hapax Legomenon within the entire corpus, or Hapax Legomenon and difficult words, and the entire corpus of the Tanakh, of the Gavdalet Sfarim. And I want to start, I don't know, maybe some of you heard me about this specific thing, maybe I spoke about it, but I want to start with a very famous thing, is Vayahalom. ויחלום והנה סולם מוצב ארצה וראשו מגיע השמיימה והנה מלאכי אלוהים עולים ויורדים בו. Of course, חלום יעקב המפורסם, the word סולם, which is Hapax Legomenon. Now, in modern Hebrew, סולם means a ladder. In modern Hebrew, it's also very interesting to see how modern Hebrew really extrapolate on ancient biblical Hebrew. In modern Hebrew, it is very interesting to note that the word סולם is a regular word in Akkadian, a regular word in Akkadian for stairway. And the word sulam in Akkadian is not sulam, but rather similatu. And we have the Hebrew sulam. And you have a dagesh in the lamed. You have a dagesh in the lamed. You ask yourself, what is a dagesh hazak in the lamed? If you didn't know that it's come from it is a metathesis here, over here, it's very clear metathesis. Sikul otiyot. Sulam, samech lamed mem, similatu. Sikul otiyot you have over here. This is the only time the Tanakh, you have Sulam. That's very, very interesting. Why do I take Sulam? Because some of you already know it. Because we have a very interesting thing, which is we're speaking about Similat Shameh. Sorry. The idiom, Similat Shameh, which means Sulam Shel HaShamayim. And we have a text that it says that Ila Namtar Arkat Similat Shamami. Namtar, which is the god of pestilence, ascended the long stairway to heaven. And this is the idea of Sulam Mutzav Arzav Rosho Megiyah Shamayim. The relationship is very clear between Similatu and Shameh. Simple. Next. In the very famous Bereshit, in the famous, very famous Bereshit, 30:27, please. Bereshit 30:27. We have the following. Two very important things we have over here. What is it, 30? 27, right. But before this, take a look at Genesis 31, 39. Yaakov Boreah, Jacob is running away from Lavan. And he hudalak harav, he finds the trafim, and he tells him the following: Zehashrim shana anochi imach rechelecha v'izecha lo shikelu ve'elet zonecha lo achalti. Terefa lo eveti elecha anochi achatena miyadi tevakshena gnuvti yom ugnuvti laila bayom achalani chorev v'kerach balaila v'zidad shnati ma'enai. Ahatena, anybody. Hapax legomena. Question is, Anochi Ahatena, what is it? If it's from the verb het tet aleph, it is not exist in PL. Period. Het tet aleph does not exist in PL. You have yes, hatati, hehteti in the hifil, but you don't have hteti. Apax. Why is it here? Is it from the verb hata, het, tet, aleph, to miss, to have a sin which really to miss the right path, or something else? A brilliant article, it's not mine, a collection, some of mine, some not, a brilliant article, and then I'm going to go to the article. A brilliant article was written by J.J. Finkelstein from Yale University. He was a Talmid Hacham. He was very religious, and he died in the age of 52, but a brilliant Semitist. He wrote an article in JAUS 88, Journal of American Oriental Society, and this was an issue for the death of Ephraim Speiser, a very famous man, archaeologist, Ephraim Speiser from University of Pennsylvania, and this is the first read. There are beautiful articles there. One of the articles of J.J. Finkelstein. J.J. Finkelstein wrote an article called The Old Babylonian Herding Contract in Genesis 31:38. Old Babylonian. Why did I give you Similat Shameh? As by way of introduction, although you know it. Because there are some ancient stuff in the Bereshit since I don't even yet begin to understand how Ahatena there. Old Babylonian, the time of Abraham, plus minus. It's a herding contract. Herding contract. I'm reading you the contract. I'm not going to bother you. I gave you the citation. Pick up. Go learn. Herding contract. It says 92 lahratu, 20 imeru, 20 liliadu, 24 hurapu, 33 enzatu, maybe you understand, 4 uritsu, 27 lalu, and so on and so forth. then Ipkidu, then Ana Pihatim Izaz, Uhaliktam, Irab, Niditam, is the name of a man, Kaparshu, Udapira, Anahiti Izaz. Anahiti Izaz. In a minute I'm going to translate it. Let me just write it down. Tet. Yeah. The translation. 92 ewes, 20 rams, 22 breeding lamb, 24 spring lamb, 33 she-goats, 4 male goats, 24 kids, total 158 sheep. And I cannot go through the entire thing what happened with Yaakov and Laval. I just want to speak about the word Vamivin Yavin. 64 goats, which Sin Shamuh, a nice name, Shamuh, Sin Shamuh. Sin Shamuh has entrusted to Dada, that's a nice name, the shepherd. Dada the shepherd. Dada Re'i, Dada Ro'e. It's not Amin Dada, you know. He, Dada, assumes liability, therefore, and will replace any loss of animals, should need any loss of animals, any loss of animals, should need Danatum, his, Dada's shepherd boy, absent himself, he, Nidanatum, will bear responsibility for any consequence loss. Anahiti Izaz. Anochi Hatenna Mihadita Vaxenna. Isn't that the hair like this? Only once in Bereshit? Only in the old Babylonian text? What happened? If we were a class, of Hatu in Akkadia, is to bear responsibility, period. But the beauty is that to bear responsibility in a contract of a, that's the Hashu. You see, what we learn always from our teachers, that you don't say a bear responsibility. You can have a bear responsibility to your wife, but you cannot imply it here. Over here is within the context of the Herdi contract that exactly Yaakov had with Lavan, so he's using a terminology which is was common at the time as far as the Henry contact is concerned. It's a beaut. Nothing to do with the word hata to miss, hata to sin. Anochi, miyadi tevakshena, be it at night, be it at death, and this is the verb, this is hiti over, but hiti over here, of course, is a, hiti over here is, of course, the noun, hiti izaz. Ahra'i ala het, if you want. Ya'amod b'het. Ah, beautiful. Ah. Ya'amod b'het. As uzuzu means to stand. Exactly as mezuzah. Where do you think mezuzah came from? From Zeus to move? I cannot go. This will cost you some more money, you know. Mata Hoshev, you know, everything you give, you know, you have to. Of course, uzuzu. I cannot go into it now. But ya'amod b'het. Which means to bear responsibility. That's why the verb in Akkadian, you have a verb in Akkadian, Hatu, Rabbi, that I cannot go into it, which means to bear responsibility, but here within the context of the agreement is beautiful. Very good question. Excellent question. Excellent question. Is it a borrowed word or is it cognate? Right? That's all my life I have this Taurus. You miss the whole fun, what is it? At least I saw your son today. It's an excellent question. I would maybe, since it's very important methodologically to know what we're doing and I'm trying to interest you, that you should not fall asleep on me. 9:30, who is 9:30 in New York doing this thing now? And the why, you hear about this woman and that woman, a woman that writes a book about Jewish humor, you know, the very famous one who review books for the Jewish Week. She doesn't want to review my book. Who cares for her? The book will be reviewed in Jewish press in 2 weeks. בתוך עמי אנוכי יושב. Too bad for them. But maybe the New York Times. And then everybody's going to run after me. Exactly what happened with the Jews of Yemen. Once I entered, everybody ran after me. Anyhow, it's Hashem Gadol. Excellent question. Let me go to my article about listaper. Now, since you don't have, you know, in Hebrew, to shave is galah. Nachon? In Biblical Hebrew. You don't have shafar and you don't have galav. Now, you have galav, ta'ara galabim, only once in Ezekiel. It is a borrowed word. Clearly borrowed word from Babylonia. From Babylon at the time. Otherwise, Haskell would use a galah. Ta'ara galahim. Why is it ta'ara galah? You cannot say ta'ara saparim. Because Sapar Listaper is post-biblical, which means is the late Hebrew, which means Tanaic Hebrew, between 0 and 300 after the era. Haskell could not use it, but use Galav, a borrowed word. Heichal is a borrowed word. It was a borrowed word. You have some words which are borrowed. The words which are borrowed are kultur words, words of... Computer was not borrowed in modern Hebrew as a culture word. You have machshavim. מה אתה לומד? מדעי המחשבים. מה זה המחשב? מה המחשב? How? I don't know. Here I have the feeling, the sense, that since he was in Babylon, in Haran, he was not in Babylon, but he was in Haran. So you're speaking something that the word, the terminology that is a cognate, that is stayed only once is a different story, but it shows you how ancient it is. Now I'm going to go to the business of Genesis 31-38. Questions? Cost you money for that.
Galach, used to shave.
Yeah.
There's also, I'm trying to find the origin of the word Galach, meaning either Russian Jewish, as being a priest. Is it because priests shave their heads at one time? One is basically...
Absolutely so. This is semantic development. That's what you call from a specific to a generic term, yes, absolutely. And conceptual too.
Now there's another thing. You say in the Yeshua Nesra, you say Shaber Mager. Mager is exactly what we now use culturally. He's a guy who gets mugged. To break down, to beat down. Is that culturally an accident?
This I don't really know, but Magyar...
Well, it's
conceptual. Maybe it is. But the first one I buy, the second one I have to look into. I can't tell you the second one I buy. I don't want you to come next week, you know, but I'm being honest with you, you know. it's one, a chatsi. So let's just go back now to, to 31-38. Nihashti vayavarcheni. Now you know that I spoke about it too, but I wanted to bring this. I did not say after you didn't hear from me. But Nihashti, of course, is everybody says Nihashti. I have made a divination. What do you mean to make a divination? What is it to make a divination? Yeah, 27. Genesis 30:27. No. Yeah, of course. That's the whole point. That's my point now. That's my point. The Nahesh in the PIL means to make a divination. Nahash, the substantive, means divination. What does it mean here? Nihashti. I made a divination and then that's why Hashem blessed me because of you. What do you mean? Yaakov make a divination. Each time Yeshevo Alim. What? Elavan. No, who says it? Nihashi Varachin Hashem. All right, so Lavan says Nihashi Varachin, right? It is interesting to know that in the herding contract that we have just learned, you have the verb Nahashu, which really means to be rich, to prosper. And this is a regular word in Hebrew, to prosper. Now, if you lack, I'm not going to push my point. You want divination. He made a divination with the Trafim and he was Shem Berechodi. If you say, I have prospered and God blessed me because of you, it makes more sense. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to push the point. But within the contract, Nahashu is a regular word to be prosperous. Let us go now to the next step. Yeah.
Over there, it's a similar type of usage. It's checking things out. It is checking things out. So you see that the word is used.
Yeah, within the context, you're right. But you like a divination over here?
It's a type of checking things out. You can check it out however you check it out. Yosef, let's say it's a type of divination when you said the same to them. But the word over there means that I check things out. Don't you expect me to check things out?
With yourself. Absolutely. But what about Levan?
Well, once you have it, that it's being used that way, that could be using it that way also.
What does it mean? I check things out and
right.
God bless me.
I found out that I've been blessed because of
you. All right. I'm not going to push the point. I like very much Nahashu. I see it's within the context, within the realm.
No, it needs to prosper.
Yeah. I mean, you go to Nahashu to prosper in Akkadian 100 times. I mean, this is the word to prosper. For the verb Ashar, it means to prosper, to be rich. And it fits the context beautiful. He most probably became rich because of Yaakov, especially with the whole business of Akudim and this and that. Let me go one step further, and maybe this will convince you. After J.J. Finkelstein wrote the article, Moshe Greenberg, I'm revealing all my secrets. Moshe Greenberg wrote in the memorial festschrift for J.J. Finkelstein an article about the verb Nahash, and I think you find it fascinating now, and if this would not convince you, in other words, we thought it's a hapax legomenon. We thought. But Greenberg continues the idea of to prosper, and to prosper, to be lavish, to overflow. To prosper means to be lavish, to overflow. And take a look at the case in Ezekiel 16:37. I want to dwell on it a minute. Ezekiel 16:37. Yeah. He speaks let's say from 30. Ma amula li batech, because I'm going to speak about ma amula li batech right after this, although it's not in chronological order. Ma amula li batech. בעשותך את כל אלה מעשה אישה זונה שלטת במנותייך גבך בראשך כל דרך ורמתך עשיתי בכל רחוב ולא הייתי כזונה לקלס את נן האישה המנאפת תחת אישה תיקח את זרים לכל זונות ייתנו נדה ואת נתת את נדנייך לכל מאהבייך ותשחודי אותם לבוא אלייך מסביב בתזנונייך. I especially read the whole the whole thing. ויהי בך הפך מן אנשים בתזנותייך ואחרייך לא זונה ותיתך אתנן ואתנן לא ניתן לך ותהי להפך לכן זונה. הלו שמעי דבר אדוני כה אמר אדוני יען הישפך נחושתך ותגלה ערוותך. I'm sorry for the women who are here, but we are adults. ותגלה ערוותך בתזנונייך, and besides, חזקר אותי, not me, על מאהבייך ועל כל גילולי תועבותייך וכדמי בנייך אשר נתתי להם. לכן אני מקבץ את כל מאהבייך, בלה בלה בלה, and so on so. כה אמר אדוני אלוהים, יען הישפך נחושתך. נחושת. מה יש פה נחושת? What is this נשפך? Divination. I'm not going to go into the history of the interpretation of נחושתך. But Rashi and Radak saw it beautifully. And Rashi most probably is basing himself, and he says that the Rashi basing himself is he says zav mekorech. Zav mekorech. Sanhedrin, he based himself most probably on Sanhedrin. Hine. Hine. Bishabasha, Bidikat Zura, Shabshai, most probably you know it's Sanhedrin at Sadik Bedbet. Shabshashi, Glad of Hadnezar Rasha, Israel, Ayubayim, Bahurin. שהיו מגנין את החימה ביופיין, והיו כסדיות רואות אותן, ושופעות זוות. אמרו לבעליהן, ובעליהן למלך ציווה המלך והרגון, ועדיין היו שופעות זוות. ציווה המלך ורמסום. שופעות זוות. Beautiful article by in the Feshrif, in the memorial volume of the of Ken of Nebuchadnezzar. Among the exiles carried off, I'm reading it in English, by Nebuchadnezzar were lads who put the sun to shame by their beauty. When the Chaldean women saw them, they began discharge conspicuously. Shofot Zavot. They told it to their husbands, who told it to the king, who ordered that the lads be slain. Still, the woman kept discharging conspicuously, Shofot Zavot, at the sight of the slain bodies, until the corpses were disfigured by trampling at the king's order. Now, of course, there's nothing to do with Nehoshet, it doesn't do with Nehesh, it's something to do with overflowing. Being rich means being overflow. Being prosper, being overflow. Akkadian text from the idiom, for the substantive Nehoshet, which is has to be, in my dictionary it would be Nehoshet too. One Nehoshet means bronze or copper, and one Nehoshet you will see in a minute. Nehoshtech. Akkadian Nehashtu. Text. We are the people of the text. Akkadian Nehasha. I'm sorry. Mistake. Metadesis. Akkadian Nehashtu. Long O. Nehashtu. Hoshet. Long O. Long A. Can I go into it? Text. Sinishtu Shanahshatu Marza. Incantation for the woman who suffers from Nehashtu. Sinishtu means Isha. Sha Nehashate Asher Nehoshet Marzat Merutza. Mamila Hola. Maratz, Arabic marid, Aramaic merah, shchiv merah means shchiv meratz. Klala nimretzet means a severe, a sick curse. By kaleni klala nimretzet. Marzat, woman, marzat. Next text. Nahshatu iparasa, the nahshatu will stop. Minute. Third text. In a sherim, bashahar, sherim is baboker, lapatan ishati nahshatu iparasu. After going through the prescribed ritual, let her drink of it in the morning, in a sherim, not having eaten, the nahshatu will then stop. Another text. Beltum murutz nahshati marzat. The lady will be sick with Nahshatu sickness. Rashi, the Talmudic anecdote, and the Talmudic anecdote, and the Akkadian pathological term fall together with the Hebrew zuv, to flow, when used for the genital discharge, means always and only an abnormal one. Meaningly, Yishafech Nechushtech, he is so strong with the language. He is so strong with the language, Yishafech Nechushtech, instead of saying Zav Nechushtech, he says Yishafech Nechushtech, which really Omer, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, Yan Yishafech Nechushtech, Vatigaleh Irvatech, Betaznunayich Al Nahavayim. That is the orally. That's what he used. I, Hezkel, uses a strong language. Now, Rabbi Shammah, you could expect or not, accept or not. You have two great scholars over here. Went to the same school of University of Pennsylvania under Spicer, a great scholar by himself. One is a full professor at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Unfortunately, he's in Parkinson's. I've seen him in Sukkot. Great fellow, wrote the book of Ezekiel. This is before he started with the book, Ezekiel 1 and 2, in the Anchor Bible series. Huh? Moshe Greenberg. And the other is dead, Allah Yerhamo, a 52 great giant Assyriologist, both of them. Footnote 39 of the article of J.J. Finkelstein, he speaks about the Nahashu there in Bereshit. I have prospered, the Nechushtech, I think, I agree completely with Greenberg, that it means you're overflowing and heat is being taken from the medical Akkadian texts.
Right, but in Yechezkel, where it says Nechushtech, it's a noun. Yishafech Nechushtech, Tegleh, it's the noun. And so Rashi makes it makor, makes it the source of the flow.
He said, yeah.
Right, Rashi makes it the source of the flow, not exactly the actual flow. But even if we say the actual flow is going to be like pouring out. But it might not necessarily mean, in general, the outflow. It may refer to the woman's zivat. It may be the
zivat yeah.
of a woman.
Yeah, that's what it means.
Right, maybe limited to the woman. May not be used widely. Did you show in those Akkadian texts more than the women, the flow of a woman?
Right.
So you want to come to say it means to prosper because you say, we know it means to prosper also. And then you see...
It is semantic development.
You see, the medical text is used for the women's, for the flow of the woman. But you're not finding it... You're making a big jump, in other words.
No. I'll tell you what I'm not a big making. No, let me. What I'm not making a big jump. I'm not going to speak to you from the Hebrew angle. I'm going to speak to you from the Akkadian angle. In Akkadian angle, Nahashu is to prosper, and Nahashtu are on the same terminology. In other words, you look in Akkadian in the dictionary, the CAD Nahashu, and then it says CF Nahashtu. In other words, the connection with the Nahashu to prosper, to be rich. And it has to overflow as far as the Ziva. I'm speaking from the Akkadian point of view. Azavoti from the Hebrew point of view. What do you speak about the verb Shafach? Well, you want to accept it, fine. No, I'm just, you know, trying to give you a little bit, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm right, yes.
Why
it's not me, though, either way. I said, I'll give you an answer. You say, but speaking about Eretz Zavat Halav Udvash, flowing with richness, with Zavat, and you're speaking about Isha Bezivah, Izav, no what? It's not the same word? The same word would defend the same.
Why should we develop a prospering in a rich way, in rich to prospering?
So I ask you the same, I'm throwing the question to you. Why Eretz Zavat Halav Udvash, Zava, there, his relationship to Zavat to flow?
Both are flow.
Yeah, one is flow sexually, and one is flow. That's exactly what I'm saying, Rabbi. And one is flows a. Not flowing. A person that flows, you know, a malian, as you say, a person that has a lot of money is a person of flow. A person, kamayana mitgaber. Rabbi Ben Arach, kamayana mitgaber, a flowing person. That's what I mean. Well, but you see, the mere fact that the two terminologies, in Akkadia and Nahashu, to be rich and to overflow, and Nahashatu, no scholars, I mean, this is in the dictionary.
Right. I don't know. The scholar wrote the dictionary.
Yeah.
How I just back them up, you're taking the word prosper and putting it in your English, and their word flow, it may not be as big a jump.
Right.
In English, it is a big jump.
You're right.
But in terms of the Akkadian,
it may. It may not. Maybe that's the way.
He's not saying prosper, he's saying flow. He's right. A flowing person, which to us means prosper, but it's not necessarily
a big
jump.
But you have to also put it in context where it's by Baracheni Hashem Begalef. It's Nihashti, I'm flowing. That's what you have to say, right? And Hashem blessed me because of you. It's not all that smooth.
It's a cultural definition here that actually it's very subjective culturally, because what could be, if you want to translate it in English, it has one particular meaning in present day thinking. Right. But in those days, the word flowing had a totally different...
You know what I like about it? I like about it that the Nihashti happens in Haran and Hushtech happens in Babylon. You see, the geographical location of the use of the word is Mesopotamia. What do you want for my life? As far as I, between those two, absolutely. Absolutely. And not only this, I have not really investigated because I didn't arrive to the word noon yet. Noon, then I will go into the details, be able to answer you. I just prepared the lecture here. But when I'm going to go to the noon, and I'm going to start with Nahashatu, I didn't go into it, because there was no end in what I could give the class, what could I say about this. Then maybe Nahashatu refers to something else apart from the medical text. Apart from, I don't know, I have to look into it.
Because there's another school of thought in Hebrew that seems to be studying Hebrew from another angle, using two letters, no longer the three Hebrew letters that the
Midianites... Oh, here we go again. I didn't know that.
So now they say that the root hash, they find like hashav, hashav, hashash, and they think nahash might in Hebrew have developed that way also. Another way of thinking about something. So there's that school of thought that we will have to take into account also. If they think that in some of these Hebrew words...
Two-letter roots.
But more than two-letter... But you see, hash is one of the examples that, like, even rahash, they think that all these internal...
Ellenbogen, I think it was one of the one started to revive it from Queens College, I remember. Ellenbogen, I remember very well, because he wrote also... You remember Ellenbogen from Queens College? Maybe. Okay, fine. Hush. Hush in Akkadian means hashu in Akkadian. See, the whole idea that you have noon, and I don't want to go into it really details, you know, but there's no end, because Akkadian hashu means exactly as the Hebrew hush, which means to go fast, and also it means to...
Yes, of course,
hashu, yes, to sense. So hashu in the Akkadian dictionary has nothing to do with nahashu, which is to prosper. Maybe it was, but that's not the... I'm still the old-timer of the three letters root, and I will stick to it. Yeah, well, hush means passion or something, yeah. Yeah, what do you do with the noon? I mean, language has its rules. I mean, what, you guys says noon, I don't want you to go out. Well, I mean, the noon is the noon there. The noon is integral part. The noon is pay noon verbs. You can't, you know. I mean, ha'olam ulo ifker. I'm very, very conservative. Very, very conservative. I work with a tremendous limitation, because if I want to go this way, forget about it. You know how many books I would write? You know how many reviews I'm going to have in the Jewish Forward? You know how many? He wrote a book about the Hebrew language and... I think I have it here somewhere. I'm very happy with the small little thing that I wrote about the word safar list appear. Small, lexicographic note, nice, with a poem, with a lot of details, and nobody could shake it. This I'm happy with. To start writing this and that, you know, there's no end to it. Let us go forward. But Rabbi, your ideas are well taken, and let's go forward. You know that the word tsurim in Hebrew is in hapax legomenon, tsurim. And of course, in Numbers 23, Bamidbar 23:9, you know it by heart. Kimuros tsurim erenu umikvahot ashirenu, and am levadad ishkon uvagoyim lo yit hashav. A little bit light. Now tsurim is hapax legomenon, to mean mountains. Tsurim. If it's parallel to Gvaot, it's Hapax. Tsurim as mountains, as Hapax. It's nothing to do with Tsur Sela. Ugaritic. In Ugaritic, you have the word tsurim. In Hebrew, you have the word tsurim in Gvaot. And in Ugaritic, you have also the etymology, the parallelism between Rain Resh Mem and Gimal Bet Ain. Reading from Ugaritic, and you see Ugaritic is, of course, not vocalic. In other words, it's consonantal. You don't know how to read it. It's like in Hebrew. You don't know how to read this. You know Hebrew because you know how to read it, but if you don't, you could be Tsarim, Tsirim, Adama, Gavaot, Givot. So it is, Gharim. What do you learn from this? You learn from this, first of all, here is the text. It speaks about Baal. Tobiluka Ghurim Mid Kasp Gevaim Mahmad Harutz. Let me write it down. Let me show you how it was written in Hebrew in ancient times, and every word that I'm writing over here is Hebrew, and then I'm going to give you an exercise to decipher. Why should I work so hard? Sorry. It's not Gevaot, it's Gevaim. I think you would love it. A text from the 18th century before the era in the Baal epic. Taf Bet Lamet Kaf. Write it down in Hebrew. Transfer it to Hebrew. Taf. Transfer it to Hebrew. Taf Bet Lamet Kaf. Rain Resh Mem Mem Alef I Daled Meod Kaf Samech Pe Gimal Bet Ain Mem Mem Het Mem Daled Het Resh Tzadik. Anybody wants to decipher? Okay, you have, first of all, you have silver, right? What do you have parallel? Mahmad Harutz. This one, X plus. What? Harutz, yeah, Harutz. Yeah, Yeraklak Harutz. Right. Harutz we know, no problem. But I want to show you the parallelism is not Kesef. It's not Kesef Harutz. It's Kesef Mahmad Harutz. In a minute I'll show you why. It's Maim Rabbim. It's Midbar Kadesh. It's Arazim Arze Albanon. It's X plus one. Kesef, parallel to Kesef, Mahmad Harutz. What do you think Muhammad Harutz is? You know the word? Mem Het Mem Dalit? You know the song in Hebrew? Udi Hamudi Hu Ben Avital. Hamud. Don't you say to call your son Hamud? No? Muhammad Harutz. Could you dance? Okay, so already. You have Kesef? Mahmad Harutz. What do you have parallel to what? You have Gvaim? Parallel to Ghurim. What do I understand? That Tzadik in Hebrew Tzur is not an original Tzadik, but Proto-Semitic Rayin, like what was in the R. You know, once upon a time, Hebrew had more than 22 letters. Exactly, in Ugaritic we have 32, but in Hebrew we had more than 22, but it merged in. In other words, this tzaddik is not a tzaddik, but rather Raim. If it's so, what will be the Aramaic word for it?
I'm really teaching, you know.
What will be the Aramaic for this? Tur. Tura. No? The Aramaic. No? Tura, nachon? All right, so, when you have a proto-Semitic Rain, in Hebrew it would be a tzaddik, and Aramaic would be a tet. Could you give me another example? Come on, wake up! Doctor, you're late, but wake up! What about this word? What about this word? Matzah. Ugaritic, Magaya. Aramaic, Meta. To find, to reach. That's what I'm saying is Habak Shlagomenan, from the point of view, not a Sela, this is a mountain. This is a poetic word for mountains. Merot Suri Merayonu Mgvaot Ashirenu, you have the Gregory Parallel. Could you have another example? Of course you do. What day is this? You have another example of the interchange of the text? Yes. No? When you have tzaddik in Hebrew, you have tet in Aramaic, which goes to proto-Semitic Rain. In other words, this. But I want to show you that Tsurim over here, it's not a tzaddik, original tzaddik. It's Rain. In other words, once upon a time you had two phonemes, Rain and tzaddik, which merge into one phoneme, one consonant in the Hebrew tzaddik. And the Hurim over here is the tour. Well, I'm not going to go into pronunciation. This is class by itself. So let us translate it now. This has come from the verb yaval, yud bet lamed, to bring. Lehovil. Tovilucha garim meod kesef. Gebaot mahmad harutz. Which means, the better translation, the mountains shall bring thee much silver. The hills, beauty of gold, pure gold, tahor, hamad, Hebrew, at the time of Abraham Avinu. The word is, I forgot because I'm getting old. The verb is, how you say in Hebrew to guard? Very good, matzar. How you say in Aramaic? Very good. And what do you think you'd say it in Ugaritic? Nagara. Regular phoneme integer. Natar misugad, nanochi noterai takramim, karmishi milino natarti. But this is natar two, because natar one means to have a grudge. Oh, this is homonyms. Noken venoter, altitor, alticom, altitor. This is homonyms. This is different, you understand. Next. I don't know if I want to go into it tonight, but let us go. Numbers 33:10. You know it by heart. Mi mana afar Yaakov, umi safar et rova Israel. Let me put it on the board. That's Albright. I don't know if you like it. I'm doing now Ugaritic. I switched to the northwest. I left Mesopotamia with Saddam Hussein now. I go to the other crazy in Lebanon. Mi mana afar Yaakov. Katuv mispar, nachon? Numbers 23:10, ken? Bil'am, ken? Umispar et rova. איך כתוב שם? תרובה ישראל, נכון? Clear case of parallelism. מנה, poetic. Now you know, that once upon the time, and I'm not changing anything in the Torah, and don't hold me to that. Please, do not hold me to that. You know that the Torah and the whole Tanakh were written in Ktav Ivri Atik. Ktav Da'at, Ktav Ra'at, and it was changed to the Assyrian script. In Masechet Sanhedrin we have the whole story about it. All kind of ideas. Nations does not change two things, and we change those two things. Nation does not change its script, and nation does not change its calendar. The time of Ezra and Hemia, we changed both. Those are, of course, of course. But the script was changed. Nobody really knows. The best idea that I read about it, that because that the two, you know, the Samaritans were overwhelmed, Israel at the time, was it Bulilut, as you know, and so on and so forth. And also the months were borrowed from the Babylonian months, and so on, Chodesh Rishon, Shenish, Tishi, all the Chodeshim, Chorim. By the way, I think I've told you this, maybe I should say to them, last month, do you know it? Anybody knows? Eh? No, it's the 8 months. Warach Shamnu. But you know what really got me? When I brought the first Yemeni Jew, Yehi ben Daoud Subeiri, he was 90 years old. And he was 20, as I told you the story, didn't I? I have to say it again, and it's Moshe Bernstein crazy for that. It's crazy, he sent, you know, with the email all over. And yeah, with Warach, yeah, he talked to me. By the way, this article came because of him. He one day ran to me, he says, Chaim, what is the, somebody asked me in Shul, the etymologist. I gave it to him. Yeah, no, he did give me a credit there, no? Ma chokhma. It's not that I need a credit on the internet, as I said, if he wants to take the credit, fine, no problem. Unbelievable. Yahya ibn Daoud Subeiri came to my house for 2 months. He was during the Hagim over here in 1990. The idea was with the Yemeni government to have him 2 months in my home in order to cool the situation, then he go to Israel. So when Hagim says, Mori, Ma Chodash, what is the month? He says, Marach Shwan. I said, Marach, I got goosebumps. He said, what do you mean? It's not. I says, no, it's Marach Shwan. He said, Allah Yodea. You know, I mean, he's a simple Yemeni. I mean, not educated. I mean, knows it's filod, vizeh. I got crazy. What is the... Then I went all the way to manuscripts of the Mishnah. And the division is Mar Heshvan. And now we have the whole idea of Gilad Sheyesh and Hagim as Niyah Chodesh Mar. In Akkadian is Warach Shamnu, and Warach means Yerach, and Shamnu means eight. But how this Yemeni kept the Mem Resh Het orally? Amazing. So, Mimana Afar Yaakov, it has to be most probably Umi Safar et Rova Israel. And I cannot go to show you how many times Mana and Safar are tested in parallel parables. This is a class by itself. My professor, Alav Shalom, used to tell me, maybe I'm repeating myself, I don't know, I'm teaching it 4 years. The Jews in biblical time had two gods, monotheism and parallelism. I said it once, I'm saying it again, maybe you didn't hear about it. So Mana and Safar. So if you have Mispar, who vocalized it this way? It was transmitted, it was, I don't know really how to explain why the vocalization of Mispar, but Umi Safar is better than Mi Mana. Mispar means number. If you translate who counted the dust of Israel, of Jacob, and the number of the quarter of Israel, the number of the quarter, which one? Yeah, that's what I'm going to get into. That's my case. My case was not for that. Yeah, but that's what they say. I mean, I'm not. No, but that's my point here with the hapax. Mana means to count. Yeah.
Maybe. Mona, Shalach Mona, what's the singular? Mona.
Oh, yeah.
This is a gift. What do we know is a gift more or less? Money. In French, Mona means money. The word money comes either from the Hebrew, most likely from the
Hebrew. I thought in French, l'argent is money, no?
No, l'argent is silver. L'argent is silver. Monnaie means change.
Maybe. Maybe. It's very interesting.
No, I'm French. I mean, yeah. You should be able to speak French if you're Syrian.
I'm not Syrian, I'm Yemeni.
Oh, okay.
So I'm excused. I was isolated, no languages, in the desert of Arabia. It's very interesting. It's beautiful. I like it. I like it. Right. Good. I'm thank you for that. But I'm a Semitist. I don't cross, you know. Mi mana afar Yaakov, umi safar, not umi spar. And this is the problem over here. Some people want to correct and to say it is Albright that he doesn't know what to do with the Aleph over here, though. He has a problem there. Umispar, umisafar. No, it's not that they're with Aleph. He knows what to do with the Aleph. He said that this is what you call a ditography. Ditography means that one letter belongs to the other two. For instance, bring me there. Take part of my honorarium. Get me a board, you know. This is really a tzimtzum here, you know, I mean. I don't want to erase it. Let me try to write it here. What did I say? Dictography can. Do you remember this? Ka'ayal, ka'ayelet, ma katuv sham? Katuv ka'ayal ta'arog al afike ma'im ken ta'arog nafshi lecha Hashem. This is the ditography, because you cannot, Ayelet cannot ta'arog, Ayal ya'arog, Ayal is masculine. It's to be masculine, third person imperative, I mean imperfect, a future. So then Ayelet ta'arog, this is ditography. Umi safar et turba. Turba. Israel. What is turba? Dust. Turba is a synonym for afar. And here I'm giving you the story. I have to erase this. In Akkadian, do I want to finish in 15 minutes? In Akkadian, Ephraim Piki. However, it's like Hebrew. Don't be afraid. Parallelism. Tar Buam Iniki with dust, please, with dust in your mouth, Afar Befichi, with what would be a parallel to dust? With dust in your mouth, it translates dust cloud. Be it as it may, Ephraim is parallel to Tar Buam. And you know the Arabic word for dust? Turb. Mimana Afar Yaakov. Umisafar turba Israel. Beautiful. Ma pitom rova amalepo. What a quarter, why not misafar et hatsi Israel? And I could go on and on and on. But a very interesting apax is the Hebrew Bet Nechot. Now everybody knows modern Hebrew Bet Nechot. What is it in modern Hebrew Bet Nechot? Bet Nechot in Hebrew. Anybody? In modern Hebrew. A museum. Bravo. We used to go to Bet Nechot. No, my father never took me to Bet Nechot. Yemeni, we didn't know what Picasso and Chagall. But I married to my wife, Ashkenazia, every time I'm in Bet Nechot, because she's an art historian. Bet Nechot. Bet Nechot is attested. Bet Nechot is attested only once in the Tanakh. Is Hapax Legomenon, please open. 2 Kings 20:13. Two Kings, Melachim Bet. 20, a Kaf Yud Gimel. Melachim Bet Kaf Yud Gimel, 2 Kings 20:13. Vayarem et kol bet nechoto. Remember there? Merodach bal Adan came to Yechizkiyahu. And of course, Isaiah was very, very angry at him. What is this? Why are you going to show him all the money that you have? וראהם את בית נחותו, את הכסף ואת הזהב ואת הבשמים ואת המעטוב ואת בית כלה ואת כל אשר נמצא באוצרותיו. בית נחות, הפקס לגומנון. Anybody knows biblical Hebrew, late biblical Hebrew? Meaningly, דברי הימים. I don't have the citation in front of me, but you could go home. In ancient Hebrew is Bet Nechot, in modern Hebrew is Bet, in later Hebrew is Bet Ha'otzar. And if you go to the Concordancia, you see over here a very, very interesting shift between the layer of Middle Hebrew, not ancient, Middle Hebrew, and late Hebrew, Bet Nechot, Bet Ha'otzar. Avi Horowitz wrote about it. Akkadian, Bit Nikuti. Nice. Bit Niku, Bit Nakmati, I'm sorry. Text. Aptema, text. By the way, this is from Ashurbanipal,